the agricultural industry, commodity groups, conservation groups, and many others. To plan and establish conservation habitat for pollinators. I'm joined here today by Wayne Fredericks, American Soybean Association Board of Directors and farmer in Iowa, and Chris Novak, CEO of National Corn Growers Association. And we're going to spend some time talking to you about why this effort is needed and how farmers can help. The monarch butterfly is an amazingly iconic species. Today's monarch butterflies face a variety of challenges that collectively have contributed to a decline in the size of overwintering population compared to the long-term average. These threats include loss of breeding and forage habitat, weather, predators, pathogens and parasites, and declining winter habitat in Mexico. These declining numbers call for action. Not only are monarch butterflies beautiful and special creatures, but they're also incidental pollinators. Both agriculture and biodiversity depends on pollinators, so we need them to thrive as much as they need our help to do so. This trend in the monarch's population and the mounting efforts to reverse it makes for a very compelling story. But the story is not just about the monarch's survival. It is about the power of public-private partnership and voluntary conservation efforts to bring together different sectors of society to benefit biodiversity. The overall goal is creation of a continuous patchwork of quality habitat featuring milkweed and other nectar-rich plants across the entire range of the monarch's annual migration from Canada to Mexico. Achieving this goal will not be easy, and it will require an amazing amount of cooperation among farmers, ranchers, conservation groups, transportation officials, governments, and city dwellers. Monarchs cannot survive without milkweed. The butterflies only lay their eggs on the underside of milkweed leaves, and they are the main source of food for the monarch caterpillars. More breeding habitat across the spring and summer breeding range will enable the monarch population to recover from the threats mentioned previously. As stewards of the land across much of the monarch's migration route, farmers and ranchers are in a strategic position to help. And we believe it is imperative for the agricultural industry to lead the way to promote more farmer and rancher engagement in monarch conservation. Additionally, strengthening collaborations between the agriculture and conservation communities is critical for helping to ensure a resilient monarch population for generations to come. I'd now like to turn it over to Chris Novak, CEO of National Corn Growers, to tell us a little about why now is the time for industry to act and how these actions can make an impact. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Amy. As a kid growing up on the farm, one of my jobs every summer was to walk bean fields and to pull weeds. And I will certainly say that I hated pulling the milkweeds the most, to the extent that you were left with sticky hands for most of the rest of the day. And yet, you know, we knew at the time that this was a noxious weed. I watched the milkweed seed pods and the thousands of seeds that came from those. And, you know, we knew how quickly those could spread within the fields. At that point, we weren't thinking about monarch butterflies. It wasn't an issue or a question or a concern. But as science has improved and as we have looked at the issue and question of habitat for wildlife, pollinators and monarchs included, we've recognized that we've needed to take steps. And to the extent that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service today is considering a petition to potentially list the monarch butterfly as a threatened and endangered species. And that decision is expected in June of next year. The challenge moves from simply knowing and understanding that milkweeds are a vital part of habitat for monarchs and other pollinators to actually encouraging our farmers to take voluntary steps to do something to address the challenge. The farmers that I've worked for, and I'm guessing that Wayne is no different, are very independent folks. And if they can get to a point where they don't have government rules and regulations coming down upon them, they certainly prefer that course. We've watched farmers who have taken voluntary steps to address water quality issues and nutrient management issues. And to the extent that the challenge and the issue facing us today is habitat protection and wildlife conservation. And this becomes a new part of the system that our farmers have to manage. And so the idea of how do we begin to encourage farmers to look at those areas that aren't part of their productive working lands, but maybe ditches, fence rows, pivot corners where there's irrigation, those other areas where there isn't going to be a crop planted, but to the extent that they can take steps to plant habitat that will be beneficial to monarchs, other insects, to pollinators, that's at the heart of this effort. And realizing that, you know, first and foremost, what we do voluntarily gives us an opportunity to experiment, to try different things, to see what works and has the most impact in terms of protecting wildlife. And partnering with conservation groups, with crop input companies like Monsanto and others, also then allows us to be able to track and determine which of the remedies that we may implement on the farm are going to have the most success and provide the most benefit. And to the extent that if these voluntary actions are not adequate in terms of protecting the monarch population, and the Fish and Wildlife Service does look to list the monarch as endangered, threatened or endangered, first and foremost, our farmers are prepared. We've begun the education process. They understand what the needs are. Second, we have identified tools and pathways that they can then utilize, and we believe that we can help to shape what regulatory solutions may be put in place. So first and foremost, education and a commitment to voluntary effort. Second, the opportunity to be a part of the debate in shaping any regulations that may be necessary at some point down the road. And that's one of the reasons that I am so excited to be joining in this coalition with Farmers for Monarchs.
Thank you very much, Chris. And now I'm going to turn it over to Wayne Fredericks from American Soybean Association, who, you know, Wayne, could you maybe give us your perspective and talk about some of the things that you've done on your farm?
I'd like to, Amy, and I'd like to add to Chris's comments that at this time, awareness, I think, is one of the key aspects that we are trying to get out to our farmer members, is awareness of the urgency that we can't wait on this action, that we need to move forward and move forward now. I had the opportunity to start with pollinators and habitat actually back in 2014. That's when the initial call by the Obama administration was to ramp up activity regarding pollinators. But it also coincided in our operation at a time when we were looking at our digital data that we were gathering from our yield maps and so forth. And we were working with a program where we could overlay multiple years worth of yield data and overlay that on top of cost, cropping cost, and produce what we call profitability maps. It's different than a yield map, it's a profitability map. And I think on most farms we find that there are some places, some parts of a farm that are very seldom profitable, and that there's maybe other alternatives that you could put that land to use for that might prove to be more beneficial. Well, at that time, we found some of those nooks and corners and crannies that didn't fit equipment well, or they had water quality benefits to them and so forth, that we enrolled those in CRP and chose to go the route of pollinator habitat on those. So that was our first, introduction into a cooperative program via the federal government that actually improved the profitability of our farm and also benefited, as far as pollinator habitat. We also worked some through CSP, which is another federal program that recognizes benefits there. But actually, more recently, we just started planting some odd places on our farm that we felt we'd like to enjoy more pollinator habitat. Once you have it on your farm, it's interesting when you have company come or visitors. It's always the first place you take them is out to show them your pollinator habitat, and that you get a good established habitat. It's beautiful. It adds beauty to the farmstead and to your farm surroundings. And I try to be active on Twitter and Facebook regarding pollinator programs and so forth. And I have fellow farmers now when I see them in the halls and say, yeah, I no longer, when I'm spraying my fence rows or that I try to protect the milkweed now. I no longer spray it to kill it. And another farmer tweeted me the other day, says, yeah, we changed our roadside mowing patterns so that we can keep the monarch or the milkweed species available for the butterflies. And there's opportunities out there through several programs, pollinator patches and things where, I see roadsides in some states that are just mowed clean every year, and why not put a pollinator garden in the middle of some of that? That would look beautiful, and yet you could still mow around the surroundings. There's a lot of opportunities out there. So I think it's creating that discussion and awareness with our fellow farmers. And they all want to do the right thing. I think it's just having an understanding of what the right thing is. And now we have, a whole national program coming forth with Farmers for Monarchs, where we're coordinating all of our grower organizations, we're coordinating all of our suppliers in this effort, and it's along with coordination with some of our NGOs as well. So we're all on the same page, we all understand the same certainty. We're all trying to bring forth the information and educational materials that are necessary. And in many cases, there's some financial benefits that are available to people that want to establish habitat. And so that's why the launch is coming forth now. Is the urgency is here, it's time to move. And we've got many states that are in the planning process. So, we're trying to drive people to their states if they want to get further information. And right, we've got some wonderful information in the Monarch Collaborative and many of the groups that are working together here. But it's a fun effort once you get involved with it. And so we're just trying to tell that story to the rest of our membership.
Thank you very much. I think Wayne and Chris both said it well. The point of this effort, Farmers for Monarchs, is awareness. We are trying to get the message out there to farmers, which is why one effort that we're all on the same page on in the industry and in the commodity groups felt like the right way to go. FarmersForMonarchs.org website launched today, and so it's the one-stop shop for farmers to get great information about how to establish pollinator habitat. It is not just our groups that are involved in this. The current partners include American Farm Bureau Federation, American Soybean Association, BASF, Bayer, the Bee and Butterfly Habitat Fund, Dow AgriSciences, DuPont and Pioneer, Monarch Watch, Monsanto, National Association of Wheat Growers, National Corn Growers Association, the St. Louis Zoo, the Sand County Foundation, and Syngenta. And so I'm really proud that it's a broad representative of industry and probably people who don't typically partner together, all agreeing that this is an important initiative and we should all be one voice helping farmers understand the urgency of this initiative and getting information that helps them initiate this on their farm. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and hope you'll help us raise awareness, and we'll take any questions that anyone might have.
Wayne, what's your experience been like with weed control when you have some of these interfield areas where you're letting that environment kind of go? Have there been issues where the people proliferate into the field at all, or is that not a problem?
In one, I've had some issues with reed canary grass. That's a very prolific, you know, weed that tends to be in your wetter areas. But by and large, if you had good weed control before, that's not an issue. But there again, we have information and knowledge available to us now how to address those type of issues and how to better establish pollinator habitat in those areas. It's not just a case of going out and putting some seed out there. This might be a 1 or 2 or maybe a 3-year process, and how to prepare that site so then you could have a successful stand establishment. And so that's, you know, what we're trying to do is drive people to those informational sites so that we can specifically address those sites, especially that have problems. But in many cases, these sites are going, like you say, are going to be edge of field, or they're going to be low producing sites, or they're going to be areas that have other benefits as well. Water quality, we're trying to stack water quality, soil health, soil erosion on top of pollinator. You know, why not try to meet all of them with the same acre? And so sometimes these are conversations that we have to have at the federal level. And that is one area that the Monarch Collaborative that I'm working on, and I sit on that federal policy group, is where we're trying to write or create regulations that make more sense, and trying to have those discussions in D.C. with the people that are helping to establish the rules that go down through NRCS and FSA. And thankfully now we have Bill Northey in position so that we can carry that conversation forward. It's ready. It's been sitting there. It's on hold. And we have a written document and letter to move forward on how to make some of the rules and regulations in some of these federal farm programs make more sense, especially for establishing pollinator habitat. You know, we just can't continually taking more and more land out to put into a specific habitat, but we have a whole lot of land already that is taken out of row crop production that could be improved and enhanced, and pollinator habitat brought into those areas. And like Chris mentioned, a lot of us got pivot corners and odd parts of the field that, you know, we don't need 300 acres of pollinator habitat in one spot. A whole lot of small spots of pollinator habitat make a whole lot more sense. And so again, it's education and awareness. And that's also working with, you know, our agencies that the farmers work with every day.
And if we do wait for regulatory solutions, so many times they are issue specific, narrowly focused, and don't recognize, as Wayne has pointed out, the importance of approaching these issues from a system perspective. And one size fits all, you know, we know in agriculture doesn't fit all and won't work in every geography. So again, the importance of voluntary efforts.
As we close, I'd just like to invite everyone to visit farmersformonarchs.org. I think it answers a lot of the questions and addresses what we just discussed. The hope is, as farmers go to address this challenge, they've got the resources they need to understand the questions that they might have and get them addressed immediately at this website. So thank you all very much.